Hayes versus Bill Towing. Bill Towing.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Mary Spillane, and I represent the appellants, Bill's Towing and Tom Lomas. There are several issues presented on appeal.
How much time do you want?
I'll reserve the 3 minutes, that's fine, since you already have it on the clock.
It's all right. You can take any time you want.
There are several issues presented on this appeal, from a wrongful death action arising out of the basically unsolved killing of Billy Ray Shirley that occurred at an unauthorized after-hours club that was being conducted unbeknownst to my clients by a sublessee of the tenant that they had leased the property that Tom Lomas owned, Mr. Richard Welch. The first major issue is whether the judgment against my client should be reversed and the case remanded for entry of judgment in their favor because of the failure of plaintiffs to prove that any alleged deficiency in the premises proximately caused Billy Ray's death. The second issue in the alternative, and obviously if you reach that issue and agree with my client's position, there's no need to reach the remaining issues.
With regard to the comparative negligence issue, are we reviewing the pretrial ruling of the court or the CR 50 motion, or the motion to amend the pleadings after the presentation?
I think you're reviewing both.
And what's the two different standard reviews and how much difference?
Okay. Obviously, for the motion to dismiss, which is treated as a motion for summary judgment, it's the usual CR 56 standard. Was there a genuine issue of material fact, and was the plaintiff entitled to judgment as a matter of law?
I was thinking more of the comparative negligence defense.
And that is the comparative negligence defense.
You're saying we review the decision to amend the pleadings to add that defense back de novo? Because that's the motion that was made, as I understand it.
There were two motions. There was first, we've assigned error both to the dismissal of the comparative fault defense.
Pre-trial. Right.
As well as then when the evidence did come in without objection to conform the pleadings to the proof. And I think the latter is probably an abuse of discretion standard.
Okay.
But ultimately, there is some matter of law determinations here. And obviously, we do have to look at whether there was sufficient evidence to warrant that affirmative defense. And I think on both of those, both pre-trial and at trial, there was evidence that, in fact, Billy Ray knew that he was not supposed to be on the premises. He had been rejected from the premises at least three occasions by the lawful tenant. Secondarily, when they arrived and got into the fight, he was able to exit the building safely, but then after gunshots erupted, decides voluntarily to re-enter the premises, and then ultimately was shot. In an open doorway.
Where he went out the first time? What door? Was it the same door that he was found dead next?
Actually, the evidence at trial is very, very confusing because no one really testified in any great detail. There was the testimony of Mark Lawless, and then there was the testimony of Shauna Randall, and they really, it was not clear even to me which doorway it was. But what we do know is that he was found dead or lying in an unobstructed open doorway that other people were able to safely exit through. We don't know at the time whether he was entering, leaving, what had happened or what the circumstances were surrounding that shooting.
So though I assume there was
which gets to the causation,
in this
I'm sorry.
Case, extensive discovery. And then we were struck by the quality of the evidence, which is neither here nor there. The trials happened, but it all came in through Lawless in terms of who did what.
That's that and Shauna Randall, the mother.
I assume the parties agreed that that's okay?
Let's put it this way. It appears that there was no objection to much of Lawless's testimony based upon the declarations. Whether that was proper or not, and certainly it is not what I ordinarily expect the evidence to come in, but
well,
Gino
Lawless was allowed to opine that had it been safe exits and everything else, that they wouldn't have died.
But
they wouldn't have died. So but, isn't that enough for proximate cause?
I don't think so, because again, you have to have some basis for that conclusion. That conclusion is not supported by any facts, because even he couldn't say what happened.
But there was no objection to the opinion.
But
we have to resolve all inferences in favor of the plaintiff on that issue, don't we?
But you still have to have some basis for that opinion. And when you no one knows what, if anything, happened or how he got shot, what the circumstances were, a jury is only left to speculate as to whether or not the absence, for instance, of another means of egress was a proximate cause of anything.
So your position is essentially that it's like those many cases in which summary judgment is granted and affirmed on appeal because although there's an expert declaration in the record, it's conclusory.
Correct. I think that's a good way to put it, and I would agree.
Was there an autopsy?
Not to my knowledge, and again, there's no evidence of that. I don't believe that there was. I don't know that.
Nothing in the record, at least.
Nothing in the record concerning an autopsy. In fact, ironically, even at trial, there was no evidence of how many times he was shot, where on his body he was shot, where, in fact, physically in the building he was shot, and whether he was able to leave or move toward the doorway after he was shot. I mean, we're just devoid of that evidence. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I'm sorry.
Pardon me.
Was there any evidence that he actually heard the first round of shots?
The evidence came from Shauna Randall that it was that they were outside the building.
Who's they?
Gino and Ricky. Gino and Billy Ray. Ricky was with her at the time. And then Ricky jumps out. She looks out the window. She sees him go to them and believes it was them because that's who he was going to look for. And then the gunshots erupted. And even Lawless indicated that the gunshots, I believe, had erupted before Billy Ray tried to re-enter the building.
So the record is kind of muddled on whether the shots were fired and then he left the building, or is it the appellant's position that he was outside the building, heard the first sound of gunshots, and then came back inside?
The latter, Your Honor.
Okay.
And we believe that's what the evidence, both from Shauna and Lawless, shows, is that he was outside the building when the gunshots erupted and then chose to re-enter the building for whatever reason, presumptively to look for Ricky at that point.
With regard to the emergency doctrine, did you want to address that at all?
Yes, I think it doesn't even apply in this case. And we've set forth in our briefs the reasons why. But even more importantly, even if it does apply under the case law, it only warrants an instruction on the emergency doctrine for the jury to decide whether or not he was truly confronted with an emergency that was not one of his own making and the like. And so both with comparative fault and with trespass, we believe those were issues that needed to be decided by the jury.
When you come back, would you address the remedy if we assume that you're correct?
Yes, I'll be happy to. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
Lincoln Beauregard here on behalf of the plaintiffs and the estate of Billy Ray. I want to first kind of go to a question Judge Trickey asked about the procedural posture, in essence, of this particular case. And I want to just offer up and point out that the issues being appealed are obviously by the other side in this case. And in responding to their arguments, we found it challenging because we don't think that the issues were very well framed as far as anticipating an appeal and coming before you with a very neat record to say, you know, these are the issues we're looking at now.
Ms. Spillane was not trial counsel, I take it.
She wasn't, and I'm not trying to slight anybody, but I'm saying if I'm going to appeal a case, and especially if I'm going to appeal a case and said I had a bad trial, I'm going to come up with a much cleaner record and pointed analysis for this trial court. So
on the comparative negligence issue, help me understand the plaintiff's position on this.
Sure.
Because it looks like in looking at the pretrial ruling, the judge excluded the evidence saying because there was intentional torts pled. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's correct.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end of trial, or close to the end of the trial, they make a motion to reinstate the defense based on the evidence at trial.
Right.
Isn't that preserved for us to review? What about that is not preserved, I guess, is my question.
Well, we've operated under the presumption that you're going to look at it substantively. So just because that's the way things typically go. There's an argument we have and we could make that this issue wasn't properly pled. And it's not our style of litigation as a trial team to come before this court or any court and play the game of surprise when obviously it was an issue that we anticipated. But we do think procedurally, if you look through the record, you'll see it wasn't properly preserved. But because the way the issues came up, we're going right to the merits.
Can you help us deal with the merits then on this issue?
Certainly.
Why wouldn't it be enough that there was some evidence in the record that a witness said the shots were fired and he came back in the building?
Sure.
Isn't that enough to at least get the comparative negligence issue to the jury?
Absolutely not. That would be to suggest Your Honor, that you can be, this court, anybody, but this little metal detector fails, some nut job wanders in here, and we all run out from a shooting. And, you know, lo and behold, my deputy co-counsel here is left in the court. I'm running back in to get him. And as a policy matter and as a proximate cause matter, if I go back in to try and save somebody from a shooting, you're going to say I'm comparatively at fault for my own death as a matter of proximate cause?
What is the evidence of who he was going to go back in and save?
The evidence isn't clear on that. The evidence of, and this kind of goes into the merits of the case as well. Here's the case that we proved. We proved that this facility was dangerous. It didn't have proper emergency exits. It had sealed emergency exits. And that the evidence was this. A shooting erupted. I don't even know the timeline. I tried the case. I won the case. But I know pandemonium ensued. First-hand witnesses testified that people couldn't get out of the building. They didn't know where to run. There was not safe egress. Billy Ray is running around. Who knows if he's trying not to get shot or he's trying to save a friend or he's running from bullets that are outside. We'll never know. But the circumstances are that if they'd had proper emergency exits, and absolutely Mark Lawless, who talks about building safety, who talks about the reason why you have emergency exits, who talks about the reason why you have proper egress, reasoning back to if you have 100,000 people in this room, you don't have proper exits. He's the guy that can say you don't have enough exits,
well,
and the reason why.
It sounds like your argument is negligence equals liability without causation. In other words, because they had a bad building, if anybody got hurt, they're at fault for it.
Well, I would respectfully disagree. Our argument was, and the jury agreed, that when you have a building and a party full of people partying that can't get out and pandemonium, whether it's a fire or a shooting, and Billy Ray couldn't get away from the gunshots, that you have causation, absolutely. I don't even think it's a stretch.
How do we know he couldn't get away from the gunshots? Because I think, as you just said, nobody really knows, was he running in, running out, what he was trying to do, right?
Well, to go to a more...
You're kind of critiquing the defense here, but it seems to me a plaintiff has an obligation to present evidence of how something happens.
Yeah. Your Honor, one of the pieces of evidence in the record that does support the particular causation premise that you're inquiring about is this, is that Billy Ray, and the evidence is clear, was found in the threshold of a doorway trying to escape. His body was even laying in a direction that you could understand he was trying to get out of the doorway. And, sure, there's no...
What direction was that?
I think his head was lying towards the door. And, I've tried the case a while ago, but I remember it being, and if you look on the record, you can check me on this, a compelling piece of evidence that there was no question he was in a posture in which the only inference, in my opinion, was, or certainly a reasonable inference, he's trying to get out of the building. A little kid gets shot, 17-year-old.
Other people got out of the building through that door. I mean, this isn't like, right. I think there was a case that was cited where you had evidence of bodies piling up next to a door.
Yeah, and this is just like it. And the reason...
Are there other people's bodies lying on the floor, too?
He's the only one that got shot. But the inference when a little kid's shot, laying in a doorway in a place where the theory of the case is he can't get out. He couldn't get out. And the point being, if you had proper emergency exits and you didn't have 1,000 people trying to filter out one or two doors, but instead six doors, instead of dying in the threshold of the doorway, seconds mattered. And he would have died. He wouldn't have died. He wouldn't have been shot. He wouldn't have been the last kid trying to get out for whatever reason he was there.
Help. Let me ask you also about trespassing. Why isn't that a jury question as to whether he was trespassing?
Because on the day at issue, Billy Ray was let right in the front door by the currently occupying motorcycle gang, and they said, come on in as a patron, and they were happy to welcome him in.
That's a jury argument, isn't it? I mean, why does that?
No.
What's your authority for saying that once somebody gets in?
Sure.
That cancels all previous experiences.
Sure.
With people telling you can't come in.
Yeah. Well, it would be just like this, Your Honor. Here I'm in your house in this court of appeals today, and if twice you told me to leave, and I came in here and started arguing on the third time, and we had an interaction, and you didn't say this applies today, and especially if a different judge is sitting up there and the circumstances are different, you're an invitee. You're allowed to be there. He was a business invitee that day. They turned him away purportedly in the past. A different motorcycle gang said, supposedly, kid, go away. A new motorcycle gang comes along, starts running parties. So you're talking about a different entity altogether. And say, come on in the door with your friends who are the same age.
Does it matter that this current motorcycle gang, the second motorcycle gang, had no authority to be there themselves? There's no lease. There's just somebody else saying they can use it.
As a question of privity in between the parties at issue, I believe it is relevant. Here you have the tow truck company who handed the keys over to a motorcycle gang trying to argue that Billy Ray was a trespasser, not because they didn't want him there, because they're trying to interpret and infer what this other motorcycle gang wanted him there or not. So in other words, I think that maybe if that other motorcycle gang came up and said, yeah, we were trying to keep kids out, even though we let a bunch of kids in, I think that'd be an issue. But when the owner of the premises, who is letting people use the premises for whatever they want to use it for, having motorcycle parties, having alcohol parties with kids up there, they don't have standing to come up and say that Billy Ray wasn't an invitee that day. They don't have privity with Billy Ray. This is an argument to try and get a new trial on a case that was fairly tried. And it was a challenging case, and we won. And, you know, the court had asked the...
Well, you won, but, I mean, the issue is whether there should have been an instruction that allowed the trespasser theory to be argued. Isn't that true? I mean, the jury did not have a chance to answer that question.
Yeah. Billy Ray was absolutely not a trespasser that day. The occupiers of the facility let him in and let him participate in what was going on there. He went through security. They offered no resistance to him being there. And the testimony from the prior motorcycle gang was, you're too young, kid. And here they let in a bunch of 17-year-old kids.
In the time you have left, can you talk about if we were to reverse, what would be the scope of the remand?
Right. Well, if we were to reverse, I would hope we have a full new trial. Because we got a $400,000 verdict on this case. We were proud to get that result for our client. But normally we get bigger verdicts. It was kind of small. And I think that the case law supports that if you're going to have a retrial with all these issues, even though as lawyers we tend to compartmentalize, the reality is you have a full trial for the jury to decide what a just verdict is on whatever the evidence might be. And we're going to get a bigger verdict the second time around. The defense appealed this issue, assuming that maybe they can just take advantage of a somewhat conservative verdict and then try and break joint liability and all these sorts of things for a case that, quite frankly, should have resolved a long time ago. So here, I can see that there were challenges to this case. We're proud we were able to win it on the evidence because it was hard, but it was consistent with the rules of evidence and the civil rules of civil procedure. The goal here on the other side is to try and create a situation to leverage some sort of result that is just not justified. So, you know, if we're going to have a new trial, give us a new trial, we're going to go back and get millions on this case instead of $400,000, and I'm going to just short of guarantee that. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
I'll first address what the scope of a remand should be, assuming that this court agrees that, in fact, comparative fault and trespass should have been submitted to the jury. And it's our position that it should be a trial of liability and comparative fault only. The damages in this case were fully tried. No issue has been raised with respect to any error with respect to the damages that were awarded. The jury carefully considered the evidence presented and came up with what the parties or the plaintiffs were entitled to with respect to wrongful death damages and survival action damages in this case. And that should be remain untouched because there is no issue on appeal with respect to those damages. A couple of things with respect to the trespass issue. The mere fact that Global Grinders allowed Ricky and Billy Ray and or Gino to enter the premises, it really doesn't make a difference because Global Grinders themselves were trespassers.
Is there any case that addresses this? And looking at the authority cited, essentially what I understand the appellant's argument to be is an unlawful sublessee cannot lawfully invite people into the building. Is that it? How would you instruct the jury on something like that?
I think the jury needs to make a decision as to whether or not there was any lawful permission being granted to enter the premises when, in fact, I mean, otherwise, is a landlord always going to be liable as for under invitee status simply for negligence because someone who has no authority with respect to the premises and you don't even know is occupying the premises, much less using them for a purpose for which the lease was never created, is somehow allowing people to come in?
Well, we're talking about a commercial lease here, not a residential lease. And
sure.
Isn't there some evidence in the record that I think it was either Loomis or somebody else was over there a week or so before the party and so knew that somebody other than Collected Souls had been having parties there?
No, there's no evidence that Loomis or Bill's Towing knew that anyone other than Welch was utilizing the premises. And there is no evidence.
Even though Loomis was downstairs?
Huh?
Doesn't Loomis?
There's no evidence as to what activity was really taking place downstairs, because I don't think that that building was being used for much of anything, and really it was the lot that was being used for abandoned cars. But I think even more importantly, the purpose for which Welch was given, I mean, and even Welch testified that it was made clear that there were to be no minors on the premises if he was having alcohol there. And he made that statement repeatedly, and there was nothing to controvert that. And in fact, so the fact that Global Grinders was using the premises without a sublease, without any knowledge of Bill Stowing or Lomas, and for purposes for which the lease was never, under anybody's testimony, authorized, would suggest that they were trespassers and had no ability to.
Was Billy Ray told on the previous occasions that the reason he was being excluded was because he was a minor?
I don't think that there's any expression one way or the other as to why. He was just told, you're not welcome here, by Welch. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel.